So we're here in the Pleasance Courtyard, and Sid Sloan's just come out of doing his show, Sid's Show, and I've got lots of questions to ask you, Sid. The first one I'm hoping is, start with a good tough one. When you are on stage in the theatre for 90 minutes, and you've got 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds in front of you, sometimes younger, and you're performing to them, and now I'm going to park that, next to it is when you're in front of the camera, and that's recorded and that's watched by, could be millions of children all around the world, but you're still in both of those performing with your skills. What can you achieve in one medium that you can't achieve in the other?
Well, the great thing about live theatre is you get an immediate response. So, for example, today there was a little boy who kept shouting out all sorts of random solutions to my problem, which was to find my socks and shoes in the show. So this lad's going, they're under the cushion over there. Or, you know, I said, do you want to meet my dog? And they were like, he was like, I'm allergic to dogs. And I was, so I could have some interaction with that child immediately and make that a part of the fun of the show, because that's live. That's what you can do live, which, of course, in a recorded television land, you can't really do. It's a little bit more sanitised in that respect, because, you know, you get to record brilliant links, but there's no direct response from the audience because you can't see them.
But what can you uniquely achieve then on TV positively that you can't achieve, say, through theatre?
Well, the great thing about television is that you can actually shape exactly what you want to say in the way that you want to say it. It's the same as theatre in that respect, but you just don't get the live response. So basically the message is clear, the message is how you want it to be, there are no interruptions, and you can go from beginning to end exactly the way you want to, and therefore make the message as positive as you like it to be. I think the purveying of a positive message, from my perspective, is to actually make what you say believable. And so there are often crossovers for me where I go, okay, someone's asking me to do something which I'm like, well, actually, I don't know if that would actually be genuinely true that I would do that. Or, you know, it kind of, you know, it's like selling, you've got to sell the idea. Great thing about children's television is you're selling the idea or something. So with the camera, you just sell it down that lens, and you know they're going to buy it because you have to have that belief in your eyes. So that's the medium. There's no interruption with television. So in a way, you're kind of selling without any interruption from anyone or anyone questioning or, you know, saying, well, I don't believe that, or whatever. So there are no interjections. So it's nice and clean and clear.
So here live, the truth's entirely in your hands, though.
Yeah, here live, it's great, because that's what I live for, you know. My idea of performing is to do it live, because then you're in the moment, it can't be taken away, it's gone when it's gone, you move on, and that's a positive thing in itself. So if you take someone's reaction, no matter what it is, and you can turn it into, or I can turn it into something positive, then for me, that's the great thing about it. Like, for example, there was a baby crying because it went dark in the show. I was in outer space, you know, and I'm journeying from outer space back home. It went dark, the child started crying. It clearly was because of that. I didn't know for certain, but it just seemed to me that's probably what it was. It was a young baby, you know. And, you know, but it's a quiet moment otherwise. So I just sort of said, oh, I didn't know they had crying babies in outer space as well, you know. And it's the sort of thing which you can use and still make something positive out of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And sort of upping the bar a bit for you, just addressing you as a theatre performer, is there any element of the you that's known as a TV performer, you know, in children's television? Is that ever a weight, a costume, a skin you have to take off to really be able to allow Sid to step forward?
Yeah. I think, luckily for me, when being a presenter, I'm being asked to be my personality, albeit for the audience. So with children, you're animated more and you're highlighting features which you wouldn't need to if you were talking to a grown-up. So being on theatre, on stage, the thing for me as a performer is that that's a completely different challenge, in that I can still be myself, but I can also be a performer. So on stage, I'm allowed to actually perform a little bit more and go into, like in the show here, I end up journeying from my socks and shoes through an underwater world, and I go to a beach, and I've decided it's a Caribbean beach, and I can talk Jamaican. If I started doing that on CBeebies, it might not be accepted so easily. So, but I can do things like that on stage, which means my real personality comes out even more.
So you mentioned the Jamaican you. Is there anything left of the 4 or 5-year-old Sid Sloan in the performances you do as a grown-up?
Try and get him out of the way. That's the truth. This show is all about the things that I used to be like when I was a kid. You know, when I spoke to the writer, Rachel Barnett, I said, look, what I wanted this show to be is all about me, the sort of things that I constantly do even now, and that I always used to do as a kid, like losing my socks and shoes. I was always losing keys, socks, shoes, you name it. I'd always lose things. I still do, you know. Being distracted was something that I was constantly, you know, and still am today. You know, I've always got at least 20 balls juggled up in the air, you know. So those elements of my personality are still there today, and those are the things that I was able to have fun with in the show, which is what made it good.
I'm glad you gave me that answer, because if I was going to kind of say something that you, the mission of your show seems to be, and particularly the live show, is quite, well, one of the criticisms of children's television, as it's moved into that realm, of, that Sesame Street kind of began in the US with kind of using marketing techniques to sell, you know, ideas and letters and stuff, is that we started to address children as young adults too young, and there was another bunch of people that wanted to remind them that they were still children.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, for me with children, it's an interesting one, because I've got a 16-year-old son. And, you know, when I started working on CBeebies, he was 3.5. So all of his friends now used to watch me. And what's been interesting is I would never talk to my son the same way now that I do, that did when he was 3.5 years of age. But what I would do is talk to him the way that I talk. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not going to change. In fact, I was forever trying to push the bar in terms of language with CBeebies, because bringing or dumbing down my language for children, which is essential, particularly when working with television, but not overly so, I don't think. I think it's okay to use long words or words that have some mystery about them, because it's always, always about how you say it. Yeah. The true meaning of the word can be devised or worked out later. You don't have to have the child understand what extraterrestrial really means. But if you say extraterrestrial, you know, it's like, okay, it's got something going on there. They just need to understand the meaning behind it. They don't have to understand the word itself. So, yeah, I think it's how you say it. And I'm not a fan of talking down to children. You know, I am a fan of selling stuff to kids, because for them, which is where the child in me is continuously alive, anything is possible. And I love the idea that you can look at the world and it can be whatever you want it to be. Use your imagination, come up with whatever you want. And you know, children, you look at them and you look in their eyes, that's what they're giving me. So I get that, I can't help but give that back, you know. So I want to continue that fascination and you know, keep on tapping into that and say, yeah, you know what, it is, create it however you want to create it, that's it. You know?
This man's eyes have just lit up here. I was a founder member of the Brighton Storytellers years back, and I remember more often than not, if someone stood up to share a story they'd been working on, they'd begin with, this is a story from Jamaica.
Really?
Do you draw on storytelling and that kind of stuff in your work?
Well, you know, I mentioned playing a Jamaican character or accent, but I'm not actually Jamaican. My parents are from Guyana in South America. And the thing about Caribbean people, I think, it's very much like the Irish, great storytellers. I mean, I grew up, my mum was always telling us stories, but they were stories based on fact. I mean, the fantastic thing about the traditional storytelling, and I think as a culture, Indians have a fantastic storytelling tradition. I mean, most cultures do, actually, when I think about it. But the fantastical way and the sing-song way that stories are told in a Caribbean voice just gives them a certain life and a colour and a vibrancy, which just animates it. So I think I'm lucky to have that bit of Caribbeanism about me. And I'm lucky to have had a mum who was always telling us stories. You know, we'd be there just on the edge of our seats listening to these stories that she told us about herself growing up in this fantastical world called Guyana. And you know, this place called Bartica, and we were like, wow, man, this is like a little island, and it's the land of many waters, and they've got huge rivers, and they're really deep, like the sea. And I'm like, oh my god, you know, and there'd be all sorts of ghostly stories and apparitions and things going on. It was amazing, yeah.
And you know, you've got an archetype in your show, you know, the classic, I've lost things and I need to find them, and the adventures finding them, which is always the metaphor of finding out something about yourself, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think that is true. That's so true about me, my life, you know, and I think what the mystery of living is, you know, it's to find yourself, you know, to find, to use your imagination as well, because imagination is a big feature in my show, and probably one of the biggest features, feature items, is a cardboard box. And the wonderful thing about this, the show, sometimes, is that people come up and say, all my son wanted after the show was a cardboard box, or all my daughter wanted to do was play with the cardboard box. I'm like, yes, that's a winner, because the cardboard box is just something that you can turn into whatever you like.
Most people I know who have, you know, taken a break or a diversion from TV and then come on, they often end up at Edinburgh at some point. You're going to go back refreshed, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've just finished filming another series of Let's Play for Foundation Television, which will go on air probably towards the end of this year on CBeebies. And yeah, I keep myself tapped in with certain featured shows. I'll be doing the CBeebies Panto and guesting on Justin's House and things like that, and I still do CBeebies in Africa as well as a presenter, so it's really nice to not have to do that so much and do all of this lovely theatre stuff, and actually it really does, because the great thing about my job at CBeebies was always when I started, I maintained, look, I'm an actor, so I still want to go off and do acting work. Of course, the success of the show meant that I didn't get to do that so much, but it always meant that I could go off and do theatre shows, which I did, and go off and do other little projects, which was really valuable to me. And every time, you're right, every time I went away, I'd come back and it was like a whole new presenter. I started all over again. It's great. I love doing it.
I want some hidden cameras on you in the run-up to when you go on stage. So how do you get ready?
Oh, man. Well, this show has been on the road for a while, so I can do it in my sleep, which is brilliant. So basically, I mean, here it's slightly different. I normally have a couple of crew, and there's a couple of crew at the venue that I arrive at, and they put the show together, and I just literally turn up, do the sound check, and perform. Yeah. But here...
But, I mean, how do you get ready in your head as well, you know?
Well, as I say, here it's slightly different because of the fact that I'm actually getting the set ready as well. So mentally, in terms of knowing the show, I do know it inside out. So literally, all I'm doing is a voice warm-up, a couple of little stretches... I'm ready. I mean, I'm ready. I can wake up, jump out of bed, and I'm on. It's like, literally, I know what I'm doing, and I know I'm going to have fun. One of the shows is going to be different to the one that I performed earlier on today, because it's going to be a different audience. Some kid's going to shout something special that's going to be a gift that I can use. And, you know, there'll be a different challenge with the sound cue, something. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm just ready. That's it.
And someone either from TV or theatre comes up to you halfway through this run and goes, look, this might sound a bit strange, but, you know, I work for so-and-so production company. I really like the way you performed. We're doing a really, difficult, dangerous thriller. It's going to be playing in London, and I've got you in mind for, you know, a gangster, very serious script. Are you up for it?
I'd have to say, I need to kill someone, I need to swear, I need to be really hard, really rough. I want to be the total out-and-out villain. I'd grab hold of their arm and say, I'm not going anywhere until this show starts. I'm staying right with you all the way. I'd love to, yeah. That's part of my journey, actually, at the moment, I think, for me, in terms of an acting, because I'm basically an out-of-work actor. Well, I have been until, you know, I started my own theatre production. And that's what I look forward to doing. Yeah. Carrying on, because I basically came straight from drama school. I did a tour with the Belgrade Theatre Company of the Twits, and then literally got snapped up to do CBeebies. And like I said, I've had little bits in between here and there, but really my acting has had to go on the shelf. I get to use it a lot in Let's Play, because it's all dressing up adventure, and I get to play lots of characters. I get to use it now more, but yeah, I'd love to do that. Thanks. Who's the guy? Who's he? Who's the guy or the girl?
I'm sure they're up here somewhere. But, you know, some people have definitely, you know, ended up in a position where they've kind of... TV has almost made them unemployable because of the role, you know, like you mentioned, you know, something like EastEnders or something like that. But other people, they can do it, can't they? They can be a character in a TV children's thing, and they can play up here. You know, how are you going to... Because you've come to this point where you couldn't just keep repeating it and repeating it. You want to challenge yourself. So how do you keep the one career going and make sure you stretch yourself?
That's a good question, and that, I think, is something that I tend not to worry about. When I started off as an actor, I'd had quite a number of years of working as a professional in other mediums and other industries. So I came into the business thinking, well, I'm not going to do any old job. And I'd much happily turn work down just to do what it is that I think would be of interest to me, without trying to sound like a Ponzi actor, you know. But basically, I think for me, the challenge is to find, because I'm a sort of doer, because I'm an entrepreneurial type of individual, I set up a theatre company to create my own shows. So I've got Sid Show on the road now. It's here at Edinburgh. I've got Sid Show Deep Sea Discovery, which is the next one. That opens in October. And then I've got a co-production of, which I can't quite say what it is just yet because we haven't signed the contract. We've got a co-production with another production company coming out next summer, which is going to be a bigger one, much bigger sort of panto-style production, which will help to launch me further into being a producer. And I have an empowerment program for children, which is helping to develop their own creativity using theatre and performance as the medium, which I'm launching down in Brighton with underprivileged children in deprived areas. So that, I think, is my purpose in terms of how I can use the responsibility that I feel I have now as a 12, 13-year presenter for the BBC. And I think all of those things give me the purpose that I need, that I like, the grounding. And then, you know, in a couple of years' time, hopefully, Paul, this will all be running smoothly. I won't need to be in any of the shows. Then I'll just slip away and start doing, I don't know, low-budget films and, you know, and start really enjoying that side of my career that I put aside so that I could come back and do what I want to do.
So when you slip away, and let's imagine 10 years, 15 years' time, maybe before, how would you want to leave, at least with, you know, if it's part of your legacy, children's television in a better place than people say it is now?
Yeah, well, I think, I don't think I'll ever leave. I think there's always going to be something about me that's always around. But I think, you know, I guess it's not, I'm not so concerned about children's television, if I'm honest. It's just a medium that is used to channel certain programmes. I think it's in good shape. I'm more concerned with the children. And so with my empowerment programme, I'm having the effect that I think I need to have directly with them. Because like I said before, I'm all about live performance, live interaction. You know, I'm a communicator. So for me, having that empowerment program, having that connection, means I'm getting to do what it is that I want to do with as many children as possible, in a positive way, which enlightens them, which re-engages them with their education, which gives them confidence in themselves that they wouldn't otherwise have had, because they come from, you know, broken families, dysfunctional homes, and underprivileged, deprived areas. So I think that I'll never leave that. That will always be something that, you know, will be a sort of mainstay of what I do, and I think that adds integrity to the work that I'm doing as a producer and a theatre producer as well. So those things what I'm continuing to develop. So you know, if I end up in a Hollywood gangster movie, you know, behind the scenes there'll be people who know that there's other work that I do. I also work with children, you know, helping them to develop their own creativity. So I think, you know, that's the legacy that I would prefer to think about rather than children's television. That's not my responsibility. Somebody else gets paid to worry about that.
But here at the Edinburgh Fringe, Sid Sloane's available for gangster movies, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got quite a bit of time. I've only got one show at 11:30 for 15 minutes, so I've got the rest of the day from 12:20 onwards. I can do anything.
Sid, thank you very much for talking to us.
Most pleasurable. Thank you.